I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 4054. Vice Chair Holvey, can I have a motion on the Dash 3 amendment?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 4054.
Vice Chair Holvey moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment on House Bill 4054. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just very briefly, I just note that the information or the material in the proposal conforms very closely to the language of the original bill, and I think it will work very well.
Anyone else? Okay. Is there any objection? All right. If not, amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves House Bill 4054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
You can do it in discussion if you would like.
All right. Is there a discussion? Yes. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I think this bill and the as amended is basically a circumvents a process that is longstanding and is inappropriate. I will be voting against the bill.
Excellent. As we're open for discussion, I would like to call up Representatives Gilliam and Vega Peterson.
You didn't tell me when you asked for discussion that you were going to bring. I would have saved my remarks, Madam Chair, had I known that we were going to have people speak first.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Thank you.
Please come on. Identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I represent House District 47 in East Portland. So as you know, the referendum process gives Oregon voters a chance to vote directly on a bill that the legislature passed. It's an important aspect of Oregon's democratic process, and I believe strongly in this process. But in order for voters to vote with an informed manner and to make an informed decision, they need to be able to vote on a measure that accurately reflects what's in the bill that we passed. Representative Gilliam and I, along with several other legislators from both parties, recently grew concerned that the title of the ballot measure did not reflect what was in the bill that we passed in 2013 in Senate Bill 833. We believe Oregonians deserve a chance to weigh in based on accurate information. The ballot title that's described in the Dash 3 amendments includes language that's taken directly from Senate Bill 833. It reflects both the content and the intent of that measure. We've worked closely with the Speaker's Office and Legislative Council to both make sure that this accurately reflects the content of the measure and to make sure that the legislator is within our authority to take this step. And there's an opinion from Legislative Council in OLAS that reflects that. Voters should have the opportunity to make their decisions based on accurate reflection of the bill that the legislature passed. I hope that we'll use this opportunity to presented to us by having an annual legislature to fix the technical language that wasn't done right the first time. Before we go home, we have a chance to make this right, to ensure that the initiative and referendum process works for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. Vic Gilliam from Silverton. I am not a lawyer. I'm looking at someone who has a lot more experience in these matters than I do. But I definitely have an opinion that I'd like to share with you, and it closely follows my colleague here. I respect this referendum. I do not respect the ballot title. The folks that worked hard on the referendum didn't write the ballot title. The AG did. And I don't respect the Attorney General's work that appears to me to be rather sloppy. I think there should be clarity, but in this case, I don't think brevity brought clarity. And I think that if we have the opportunity to fix something in a short session that isn't right or isn't working, we ought to try to do that. So this is a rather odd step, but it's well within our purview to bring this bill forward in the dash threes, and I hope you'll consider them very closely. In my view, using the proof of legal presence phrase in some ways is appropriate because it is in the bill a couple of times. But to use it in the ballot title, I think, is a terribly gross misapplication of that term. If you don't agree with the bill, it doesn't mean that we want to confuse or in any way diffuse what the real question is. And what I'm looking for, and I hope we'll always do this, not just on this, is a mirror, as close as human beings can make it, a mirror question to the question all of you were put, was put to you and put to me when I voted for this bill. And I don't think the Attorney General took that into consideration. I think that the dash threes in front of you do a very good job. Is it perfect? I can't tell you. I mentioned I'm not a lawyer. I hope to play one on television. But I think it does a pretty darn good job of mirroring, is that a word? Mirroring.
Getting there.
What we looked at. And I want voters to have that chance. The last thing I would say, this is big time inside baseball. And it's appropriate. Working this out in this forum is appropriate. Just remember that most voters in this state don't have the opportunity to come down for a rally day before or against some bill. Most voters are going to get their ballot in the mail. And they need clear, precise, easy to understand messages on ballot measures, on referendums, and then they got to look at their candidates, and then they've got to vote it, sign it, and mail it in, and get on with very busy lives. I think the dash threes provide them with an open and clear path for making a decision, my position or someone else's, and I support the dash threes.
Excellent. Thank you. Further discussion from the committee or questions for the people that are here? Representative Burton.
No questions, but a comment, if I could, in light of the testimony. I believe I made it pretty clear on the floor the other day that I have some real issues about the various branches of government staying within their work and their purview. In this case, it appears that the legislature is unhappy with what the Attorney General does and feels that it needs to redo the job that was done by our Attorney General. I repeat that I think it is inappropriate, and I will be voting against this.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Any other discussion? Okay.
We've already had a motion.
We've had a motion. Okay. So, Vice Chair Holby had moved that House Bill 4054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
No.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Kenmer?
No.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hicks?
No.
Vice Chair Holby?
Aye.
Chair Boyle?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes. Carriers will be Representative Gilliam and Vega Peterson.
And we are in recess.
And we are, a committee will be, close the work session for House Bill 4054, and the committee will be in recess. Please plan for 3 o'clock. And open a work session on, open a work session on House Bill 4078. Erin, do you want to go over the measure?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4078 comes to you from your Rural Community Committee. The underlying measure validates urban growth boundary adopted by Metro and acknowledged by Land Conservation and Development Commission as Metro's acknowledged urban growth boundary. There is an emergency clause on the underlying measure. We truly just got the dash amendment. It is the 12 amendment. We have two maps to the side here that reflect in visual terms what is in the 12 amendment. And I believe we are waiting for Representative Clem and Representative Davis.
We wait no more.
So I will call up Representative
and Richard Whitman as well.
Clem, Davis, Richard, and Richard Whitman. Here's what we're going to do. Because we only just got this last amendment, Richard Whitman and the good representatives are going to tell us what is in this most current amendment. And then because we want to make sure that the public has an opportunity to speak to the bill, what I would like you to do is speak to the concept. They're going to let us know what issues are still outstanding, describe the process, describe what's gone on, and then I would ask you to speak to the general concept. There are specific concerns, that's fine. We are not going to move this bill today. So just so that you know, we're not moving the bill today. We're not moving the bill until there is further work done and we get another amendment. So just so that everyone knows where we're at, Representative Clem.
So, I stand over here, but I don't know about the mic.
You've got to introduce yourself first. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Are these materials on OLIS so people who are watching can see them? Okay, thank you.
How do we handle that?
Madam Chair, if you end up with maps in front of you, maybe
we have.
Look, got some cord length. You can grab it.
Bring the maps over here so that you can be in front of Shane. Yeah. Well, how do you want to handle this? He needs to be in front of the mic.
I'm not sure.
We're going to bring the maps over to the mic and stretch out the cord.
Tell us how wonderful it is.
Come on, Richard. There we go.
All right.
So,
Put the microphone in front of you.
I'm Brian Klemp, State Representative from District 21 and Chair of the House Rural Communities Committee that sent you this bill. When we sent you this bill, we at the time felt there would be ongoing need for negotiations, so we wanted a place to, I think, as we talked about, park it while those occurred. Those have since occurred, so we want to come and bring to you, again, pending final amendments, a outline of the agreement that was reached Sunday between the directly involved local governments, county commissions, regional governments, environmental interests, development interests, the governor's office, myself, and several of our colleagues who happened to be there. The process that led to that agreement was a co-convening of some negotiations starting last Friday with the governor's office and the House Rural Communities Committee chair, me, along with several legislators and a lot of folks. Sunday it broadened out to be a larger group because there were some cities who on Friday were discussed who weren't there and they needed to be brought to the table. And so on Sunday we had all the directly affected cities, counties, interest groups, Metro, the regional government, the governor's office, ourselves, in the room. Even had some that, as you'll see over time here, are not directly spoken to in the bill, like the Clackamas County Commission chair was there, though they're not directly covered by the proposal that we've got on the table. Is that all right?
Can we give some background?
Yeah, and I can go get ready to play Vanna while my colleague gives you a little background. It was he and I's bill originally. It's obviously the amendment goes a whole new direction.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, and members of the committee. Representative John Davis, House District 26. I'd like to provide just a little bit of background of where the heck this bill came from and why it is before you. As many of you know, Metro has a mandate to essentially every 5 years reevaluate the 20-year supply of land within the urban growth boundary in the metro area. It undertook this process after a delay in the recession, and after many, many public hearings, after comments, adopted a expansion of the urban growth boundary in Washington County in four primary areas in 2010. That was appealed and went through the process of appearing before LCDC, where it was approved, and there it now sits, that urban growth boundary decision before the Oregon Court of Appeals. Concurrently with that, and actually slightly before that, Metro, in consultation with the three metro counties, undertook its first ever urban and rural reserves plan and planning. This came out of a bill in the 07 session, was it? Creating this process that was supposed to create and is supposed to create a 50-year plan of both urban reserves and rural reserves, in this instance for the metro area. So what happened is, I believe it was about 6 months before the UGB decision was determined by Metro and Washington County, Metro and the counties came together and agreed on a urban and rural reserve plan for this 50-year supply. And it was that plan that was also appealed. So we have two appeals going on here that we're talking about. First, the urban and rural reserves plan, and about 6 months later, based on that urban and rural reserves plan, the more run-of-the-mill UGB expansion in Washington County that we're talking about. That urban and rural reserves plan was also a process that took all three counties and Metro millions of dollars in staff time, dozens if not hundreds of meetings, public meetings, thousands of comments. That plan was appealed to, was it LCDC where that was appealed?
No, the Oregon Court of Appeals.
Oregon Court of Appeals. And just the reason that the UGB decision has been on hold for so long is because the Urban and Rural Reserves Plan, upon which the UGB decision was based, was under appeal. The Court of Appeals came back with a decision last week upholding in part the Urban and Rural Reserves Plan and remanding essentially in whole the Washington County Urban and Rural Reserves Plan. The effect of that, as we understand it, is that it remands the entire UGB decision for Washington County as well. On a policy level, this presents a concern because in these UGB expansion areas, we have schools that are planned to be built. We have developers and the cities are telling us hundreds of millions of dollars of both private and public investment ready to go into the ground in terms of schools, homes, and industrial and business sites. And as it stands now, without the bill, this entire process, both the urban and rural reserves process and the UGB expansion process upon which it was based, will go back to square one, and we are looking at anywhere, depending on who you ask, from 3 to 6 years of further litigation and process to end up in a place of consensus. So that's a little bit of the background. I'll let some other folks chat.
Yeah, so, Madam Chair, I'll go to the map because what everything Representative Davis just said is true. So the question was, could you get to consensus on essentially the outcome, knowing this is an unusual process? The governor's office made it clear that they want the directly affected local governments to tell you all that they're asking you to do this, not that we're asking you to vote for our bill. They're asking you to have the legislature finish this up if we could get to consensus on the map. Then the local governments ask us to finish the job that they got 99% of it done, finish the job. So let me go to the map, and then I think you can probably get into your hearing and hear from the local governments and public, et cetera. Okay. This is all Washington County only. No Clackamas County. There were remands there and a remand in Multnomah County. This bill would not cover that in any manner. So the map is only Washington County. So let's start with Hillsborough. It's the primary area affected by the changes. This map is of changes to what had been proposed. So it's not every urban reserve. There would be some over here. There would be some down here. This is the things that are being changed from what the court had been considering and threw out. So the big area of change is here. This was prior to this agreement, all urban reserves. So it goes west of Jackson School Road, and north of Weibel Creek and south of 26 goes from urban to rural. Here in what's known as Helvetia area, this is Helvetia, and this area goes from urban to rural and a piece of two lots of undesignated here. This area would have been UGB expansion area if the court had upheld it. This would have been urban, now becomes all urban growth boundary. Instead of UGB and urban reserve, all urban growth boundary immediately available for the city to move in, annex, build. This piece up here was rural. So this is coming the other direction. This was moving really from urban to rural. This is moving from rural to urban. This is exception land here that's already built on anyway, not farmed. This is an urban reserve that was already proposed. We connect the exception land by designating it urban and move through along a natural boundary where this would all become urban reserve. Now that won't be built until whoever services this area gets a UGB expansion. That could be decades away. But it would provide certainty to the farmers that this is where the rural reserves are going to be, and that creek is south is where the urban reserves are going to be, and you can plan accordingly knowing that. Then there's a few pieces out here I just want to mention that are not, I would say, City of Hillsborough affected areas. They're other city affected areas. This is was an undesignated area south of North Plains. This was an undesignated area north of Cornelius, and this was an urban reserve north of Forest Grove. The proposal is rural reserve instead of undesignated, rural reserve instead of undesignated, and this one is split from urban reserve to urban growth boundary, which is immediately available, not decades off, but immediately available for annexation and building, and rural reserve. Over here, here, and here, these red ones on this map, these were urban reserve areas that become urban growth boundary expansions for those cities immediately. So rather than some urban reserves, they're giving up some undesignated rural reserves, they get immediate buildable land. One more change. It looks big on the map, but it's not in reality. It's a small piece of land that was rural. It would go undesignated near the city of Beaverton. It's needed for a road, and roads weren't clearly allowed in the rural zone. So that is the proposed map. You've heard why we started negotiating over a map. It's to save millions and billions of dollars and years of potentially the same exact outcome as we had before with more lawsuits. Maybe if they went through all that, they would end up with this map. I don't know where it would have ended up, but we essentially fast-tracked that process with the directly involved people. But obviously, that's important to hear people who weren't there, who, you know, just might be general members of the public who aren't represented by any of those local governance groups, et cetera, in their mind.
Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resources Advisor. At the request of the House members, the Governor's Office co-convened this group to try to reach a consensus on this issue. It's very important to the Governor that if we're going to do something like this legislatively, that it be done by collaboration, that it be done with a consensus of the affected local government. So as Representative Clem indicated, we have told the parties that it's important to the governor that all the cities and counties that are directly affected by this legislation be on board with the proposal. In addition to that, the other parties to the appeal to the Court of Appeals, at least the Washington County portion that this legislation would affect, also, as I understand it, are on board with this proposal. So every local government and every party involved in the appeal, as I understand it at this point, is on board with this proposal. With regard to Multnomah and Clackamas counties, as Representative Clem indicated, this bill is not intended to affect one way or the other anything that happens in those counties. Presumably what would occur there is the normal process would go forward, and there either would be appeals of the Court of Appeals decision, or there would be a remand back to LCDC to decide initially what to do, and then possibly back to the counties and Metro to decide what to do on remand. The main issue in the Clackamas County area, the issue on appeal, was the Stafford Triangle area. And the issue in Multnomah County is a particular property of about 68 acres. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anyone have questions, comments?
Madam Chair, the one thing we probably should comment on briefly, because you'll hear probably some about it, is non-map related issues. There are a few. I don't want to go through them all because that amendment probably doesn't include them all accurately, but essentially, yeah, do you? He's been trying to draft it all evening and day, so that would be helpful.
Excuse me, Representative Clem, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Richard Whitman. So in terms of the non-map changes that would be made in the legislation, several things. One, a provision on sequencing in Washington County so that for lands that are not designated as either an urban reserve or a rural reserve, they're just plain rural lands, those lands could not be designated as urban reserves until 75% of this round of urban reserves have been used up. And by used up, I mean brought within an urban growth boundary, annexed into a city, and planned and zoned for urban use. So it's intended to make sure that the sequencing, which was part of the original concept in Senate Bill 1011, continues. So urban growth boundary first, then urban reserves, and then you get to go out into other rural lands. So that's one provision that's non-map related in this bill. There also are some legislative findings to indicate that this consensus proposal for Washington County, together with the decisions in Clackamas County and Multnomah County, continue to meet the standards for urban and rural reserves. And then finally, one of the issues that the Court of Appeals decided in its decision was that essentially, if there are problems with the local government's findings, the question is whether the Land Conservation and Development Commission can nevertheless approve the local decision if there is evidence in the record that clearly supports the decision that the local government made. The Court of Appeals had essentially found that LCDC does not have that authority, and we would clarify in this legislation that that authority actually does exist.
We'll talk. I think maybe I took that part out, so we'll talk about that.
Chair, one more comment. I want to ensure the committee understands I represent Clackamas County. I also represent and live in Wilsonville, much of which is Clackamas County, both Washington and Clackamas, and as well as spoken with a number of affected parties in Clackamas County, all of which have requested absolute clarification that this legislation only affects Washington County and would not prejudice Clackamas County or Multnomah County's ability to add specifically industrial and economic land to those counties in the future. And at that request, we have added specific language in the bill that says this industrial land that's brought in, specifically the red area you see on the map in Hillsborough, will not prejudice for purposes of, because Metro looks at the whole area, will not prejudice Clackamas or Multnomah County in any of their further expansions in the future. So that concern has been heard loud and clear and I believe addressed in the legislation.
The concern is if you count it, then in this very next round, there's a bunch off the table. And so the way it's structured, these are declared a certain category of lands of statewide industrial significance that do not count in that number. So what I'm working on with Clackamas County as soon as I leave here is some discussions with Metro leadership about, even given that, what can we expect for next time around? It's too early for them to commit, I'm quite certain, but I think Clackamas County wants to hear that if Washington County is going to have this much new UGB area, that they want to get some next time around.
Fair enough. Thank you. Yes, Representative Kenema.
Yeah, I guess on that note, I have a number of different concerns. I mean, I find the word prejudice an interesting word, and I guess I look at it, I see supply and demand. And if you're going to increase the supply in Washington County, you're going to lose the balance that we've been working on historically to achieve in the region. So I guess I would like to add that to your discussion. I think, the other piece that's very difficult, several more pieces, another piece that's difficult for Clackamas County is at this point and historically, we have been the lagger economically and growth-wise in the metro region. And if we're not careful, this does make that worse. We were just at a recent briefing that Clackamas County put on where they indicated Multnomah County is at 104%, Washington County at 114%, and us at 44% of job recovery from the 2008 recession. So this bill ends up having, in my mind, a pretty darn dramatic effect. A couple of other questions, and I'm trying to get through this quickly. Appreciate your indulgence, Madam Chair. So I'm having a little trouble with the comment at the beginning, this has no effect on Clackamas County. But I think that is the intent of this, is that these rules are to apply to Washington County. On that note, I do have a question, and that is, does this bill in any way limit Clackamas County's ability to, on remand, to redesignate their lands as Washington County can do? And Clackamas County have the very same right that Washington County has?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Kennemer, actually Washington County won't have that right, and Clackamas will, because we're about to fix, if we pass this, we'll fix their map. So their remand is dealt with legislatively. But Clackamas would still have the right to adjust according to the court case. For example, Stafford is an area in Clackamas County that was talked about as incorrectly applied as urban. If they want to redo their factors and come back with more urban, and your question is, can they do that? Nothing about this bill would extinguish that option for them.
Madam Chair, Representative Kennemer, for the record, Richard Whitman, just to make absolutely clear on this point, Clackamas County would have that right if there's a remand to Clackamas County, and Clackamas County would have to go through the normal process to do that, which would involve a decision by the county. And for adding urban reserves would also require Metro to go along with that decision.
And I'm sorry, I missed the earlier brief.
And I want to speak to your first question, which I think is very important. So, Madam Chair, Representative Kennemer, if you can start mentally at before the court case, now not everybody will agree that's fair now because it just got thrown out, but let's just say you could start mentally before the court case. If you look at Washington County and Hillsborough and look at all that green versus that blue, they just lost thousands of acres of urban reserves. And so they really don't feel like they're gaining by this deal from an urban standpoint. The UGB is bigger, but the urban reserves went not their way. The farmers will tell you that's a good thing, but the cities, I think, will tell you they gave up a lot that nobody else are giving up, so that's why they're getting some certainty now. So in the short term, there would be a UGB expansion. If you go back before the map, before the court case, there would be a UGB expansion that would be larger than what would have happened. No doubt about that. The court had just upheld it. But we are in the bill making sure that does not count numerically against the next round, which is where we'd be with Clackamas County anyway, in the next round. They weren't getting any here, which was their complaint, so they want to make sure they're going to get some next time. If you numerically don't count it against it in the bill, then you get into, I think, as you're describing, well, but did all the companies go there this time or not? I don't think we're going to be able to control the market here, to be honest. So all we can do is say, for the huge net loss of urbanizable area to Washington County, they get a little more certainty now. Now, later, in out years, not just this next UGB, but in out years, you'll notice they don't have many urban reserves left. Many of them, there are some that aren't showing here because they're not changes, but there's not many left. In those years, given the metro region needs to go into urban reserves before it can go to undesignated, the other counties are going to be benefited in the out years automatically because they're going to be the ones with the most urban reserves to go into. And your chair was at the meeting. We talked about that before. He reiterated those same concerns, and I think they're appropriate. Mm-hmm. I personally feel like if you went back before the map, they probably didn't like that either. I don't think this is a huge change in reality because of the formula change and the very minor number of acres that go UGB now that otherwise, you know, might have, you know, if this thing got relitigated, reprocessed many years from now.
Madam Chair, another question,
yes.
Please. Thank you. Now, does this then also address Clackamas County's urban and rural reserves?
No,
I just want to get that on the record.
There's one line that might help them, but it certainly doesn't impact theirs at all.
Anyone else? Yes.
A different topic, if I may. I'm looking at sections, I think 6 and 7 in the amendment, the dash 12 amendment, and it appears to me as though this is almost entirely procedural and timing related. Can you tell us what that's all about?
I'll let Director Whitman. It's less applicable now because this matter would be resolved in large part by legislative action here, but if you want to cover
it. Well, if I read this correctly, it not only affects this particular situation, but future situations involving Metro.
Right.
And that's the reason I asked the question.
Yeah. Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, Section 6 would, as you note, is a procedural section that would impose a deadline on the Land Conservation and Development Commission for issuance of a final order following its review of Metro, either urban growth boundary or urban and rural reserves. There, in current law, is no deadline. This past decision took LCDC almost a year, I believe, to get the order out. So part of this is a general desire to tighten up the process as we go forward. So we've got a 180-day period for LCDC to make a decision. And then similarly in Section 7, once Land Conservation and Development Commission issues its order, makes a decision, we've put a timeline also on the Court of Appeals review of that decision, just like there is for review of Land Use Board of Appeals decisions. In fact, it's longer than the period for review of LUBA decisions. And again, this is part of a general policy desire to avoid the situation that we have this time around by tightening up some of the procedural timelines around this.
Yeah, if I could just comment. I have no idea whether these are the right numbers or not, but it certainly is reasonable that decisions get made with whatever dispatch can be done within the budget and within the time that it takes to gather the facts. Spending years and years and years on this kind of matter seems, at minimum, excessive to me.
Madam Chair, I might just add, this was negotiated and discussed in the policy committee before it came here. This part, it's the map that wasn't. So you can hear from the courts and others. But we had a discussion about this. They were too low initially. We got to a place they can live with. The mapping is what, by the time we sent it here, we really needed some more time to work on. But this work had been done, and we felt like it was, you know, useful in case this ever happens again. So let's just include it.
And one final thing, if I could. I'm told that we're going to have another amendment.
Yes, we're not voting on this today.
Right. And can you give us a sense of, or have you already given us a sense of what's in that amendment?
I think Mr. Whitman outlined
already
the outstanding
covered.
Issues.
So part of what you were talking about is what's going to be in that amendment.
Yeah, the one remaining issue that we found is while we had an agreement among the parties who were there Sunday on a issue really not exactly related to this, but it was an opportunity to talk about urban service provisions within a special region that's not bound by the normal laws we deal with. It was called Senate Bill 122 agreement. We're still trying to hash that piece out. So that resolution will be in the later amendment. I'm not going to get in all the details right now because it's street lines and it's jurisdictions, but that will be coming in the second amendment as well. We're going to get those people back together and rehash that one out if we have to.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and we'll have an opportunity to see that amendment before we vote on this bill. Great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I ask another question? Thank you. Just in line with some of my previous questions in the dash 12s on lines, page 1, lines 13 and through 15 there, it seems to me that, and maybe I read those incorrectly, I'm talking about impacts.
Yeah, that's the one you're rewriting. That's the one you're rewriting.
I'm not changing this language.
So I think, Madam Chair, it might be helpful to explain why this will benefit your counties, because their names are listed, so can you explain what the finding does?
Sorry to get paranoid, but...
Yeah, it's okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer, the amendment that we're working on right now actually would take out the names of the individual jurisdictions and replace it with just a general legislative finding that the decision made by the local governments together with the changes to the Washington County maps continue to meet the overall goals and objectives of the Urban and Rural Reserves Program. That's the basic intent of it.
Is that helpful?
For the moment.
Okay, and we'll see the next amendment. Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Representative Unger, do you feel like they've represented your perspective adequately?
Close enough?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. And then I will call up Jason Miner with 1,000 Friends, Sean Jillians with Tonkin Torb, and Les Poole with Clackamas County. Whoever gets up first should identify themselves and start testifying.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, I'm Jason Miner, the Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on the amendments in the bill in front of you today. This is an exceptional circumstance. The legislature, as you heard, created the reserves process with a highly important goal to provide certainty for rural and urban land uses. Last Thursday, the Court of Appeals ruled that Metro indeed had the authority to create reserves, but that the process was incorrect. We at 1,000 Friends believe that with the interplay of the Urban Rural Reserves decision and the process that went on to create Urban and Rural Reserves, the Urban Growth Boundary decision, the ruling on reserves last Thursday, and the pending status of challenges to the Urban Growth Boundary, coupled with the agreement that you heard about already of all of the local governments involved and many of the parties involved in the reserves decision, that before you is a situation that may warrant action on the part of the legislature. The goal of providing certainty for both farmers and urban interests is a highly important goal, one that must be balanced with the importance of allowing local governments to make local land use decisions, the importance of goal one and the protection of citizen involvement in the process. A lot of those issues are at play in the issues before you, although we have not had a chance to thoroughly read all the amendment or all the elements that are contained in it. I believe that the circumstances before you are exceptional and may warrant the action of the legislature that's before you today.
So, Mr. Miner, are you saying that you are in support of the general concept pending reading the final agreements?
Yes, as everybody back in the audience, I was reading it.
Okay, great. And again, there will be some time, and we'll see the next amendment, but that's your position. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle.
Mr. Jillians.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Sean Jillians with Tonkin Torb, here today representing a variety of developers in Washington County, including Metland Group, Newland Homes, and also the Oregon Association of Realtors. Thank you for hearing this important bill, Madam Chair. I see the look you're giving me for bringing this idea to the legislature during a short session, hence why I'm looking away. I think this was something that we originally brought dealing with just the urban growth boundary because it was that important to solve some of the issues in the region. Obviously, the court case has broadened the discussion. I do want to give credit, though, to the legislators involved in this. This has been one of the most remarkable processes that I've been involved with. The governor's office process as well, as they've brought together the most diverse group of stakeholders I've ever seen involved in my time here to come to a form of consensus. We are fully supportive, obviously, of the general concept of the amendment. We're also pouring through it to make sure there's no errors there. The one thing I would add, Madam Chair, and it goes a bit to Rep. Kennemer's comments about Clackamas County as well, a huge portion, if you read the 126-page decision from the court, is dedicated to Washington County. And why the entire court case was remanded is primarily dealing with Washington County. So I think the hope here, Madam Chair, is that once the issues in Washington County are resolved, it will be much easier for Clackamas County and Multnomah County to make it back through the remand process. With that, happy to answer any questions.
Perfect. And Mr. Poole.
Thank you. Les Poole. I live in Gladstone. I've been involved with land use since I was about 14 years old. I rarely refer to notes, but I'm looking at a lot of them. And for the record, Thousand Friends was the plaintiff in the action. I've listed myself as neutral in my testimony, primarily because I do have a lot of questions. I support the spirit of what's going on here. At the same time, I have the same concerns that Representative Kennemer and others do. Metro's charge is to provide a 20-year supply of land for the region. So when we look at the map here, we only see Washington County pretty much on it. And I understand that's the focus of what we're doing here, but whatever happens here will have a direct impact on Clackamas and Multnomah. Currently, there's an imbalance in jobs, and a lot more people are moving to Clackamas County. Our concern is that we're creating a bedroom community without enough jobs and industrial land. I'm a little bit troubled with the term or the verbiage that I heard earlier about, well, this won't prejudice Clackamas County. That may be true, but how long will Clackamas County and what type of process will Clackamas County be subject to once this decision is rendered? So once this decision, if for example, this is approved with some amendments, maybe we've created an opportunity down the road, but if Clackamas County and Multnomah County are already playing from behind, if I could term it that way, aren't we really exacerbating a core problem? And I think I've got questions, and I think a lot of folks have questions, and with some amendments, I would be more inclined to support this. So I'm not so much against it as I am really questioning some of the details. You know, obviously the decision was recently rendered, the clock is ticking, and because of that, you've got a lot of work to do. Regardless of the outcome, this is about a 50-year supply. This is going to dramatically affect transportation, land values, winners and losers. And let's face it, we're all human. If it's your community that's going to benefit from something, you're more inclined to support it. If you see a detriment or you have concerns, you're more inclined to say no. And again, as someone from Clackamas County, I think that the bigger issue of how we're reaching these decisions and why there isn't a little more local control in the first place would need to be addressed, but we'll save that for next year. I would request that in the amendments that Clackamas County be given some clear latitude. If the urban growth boundary is addressed every 5 years, and this leaves Clackamas County to wait till next time, Clackamas County's 5 years farther behind. At the same time, the spirit of the bill I completely understand, and it's obvious that, much like the situation in Damascus, it's dragging on, and that is costing millions. That is certainly creating a situation where business properties are in a stalemate. When you look at all the things that are happening in Oregon right now, the last thing we need is to have things tied up and to have ourselves at loggerheads or wondering what the future will be. So at our next committee meeting, it would be great to see the map to include Clackamas County, and hopefully some consideration will come that way so that we don't go down this path and then find ourselves reacting in the future. I appreciate your time today, and any questions I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Poole, and thank you for coming here today. It's apparent that you very much care about your county, and this is a situation that, again, we're reacting to a court decision that was predominantly focused on Washington County. We
right.
don't want to unduly prejudice Clackamas County or Multnomah County in their ability to for Metro to manage their growth and preservation of farmland. However, we are in a position where we need to act, and I don't believe that a Clackamas County map will be included. I believe that the course that it looks like we're going to go down is to have a Washington County map and include language that allows you to have the control that you need to do what you have to in Clackamas and Multnomah County. But again, I don't know the details of the bill. We will certainly get you those amendments. Hopefully you will feel more comfortable with them. And I know that the people working on these things are in touch with your county chair and also the Multnomah County chair.
Thank you. And again, I really, with a little more clarity there, I would certainly swing from being uncommitted to endorsing this, because it's a cliche, but we need to move forward.
Well, thank you
very much.
Thank you so much. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you all. I would like to call up Chief Dyke from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Mark Landauer from Special Districts, and Bruce Miller from the State Courts. You may
go ahead.
Start.
Go ahead. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Dyke. I'm the Fire Chief at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. You know, this work reminds me of a lot of collaboration, and it's great to see this at this point. It also reminds me of a lot of collaboration that occurred within Washington County about a decade ago, and that was when the counties, the cities, and the special districts met with one another and with the citizens we serve and developed agreements to guide the transition to urban services when annexation and development occurred. These agreements called for give and take, and the reality is we accepted that because it allowed us to plan with certainty on our future. Not surprisingly, they were also approved by each of our governing bodies. The authors of those agreements were wise, and they anticipated that one day that there might reach a point of disagreement. They also created a dispute resolution process. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue in the city of Hillsborough recently hit one of those spots in the agreement interpretation road, but fortunate in the intergovernmental agreements that we had, there was a transition of fire and medical services, and broader in the urban services agreement provided directly for us to meet with a retired judge of the Oregon Supreme Court, Honorable Judge Dietz, and to hear our arbitration case on the dispute. Time doesn't allow me to get into that, but just wanted you to know that the judge did rule in favor of TVFNR, and you have every right to wonder why am I bringing this up today. The simple answer is it doesn't have a lot to do with House Bill 4078. They should have nothing in common. The effort, though, to provide your good work on 4078 is not to alter the results of that court case, of the how urban services and planning decisions in the community were reached, because they were reached through consensus more than a decade ago. Your hard work is to achieve a balance that is done through direct and sometimes tough dialogue. We very much appreciate that those urban service planning agreements should remain in full force. So we're working on clarification to ensure these urban service agreements remain in effect throughout this legislative process. So with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. Mark Landauer representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Chief Dyke has outlined pretty much our concern here. We are neutral at this time. However, we are concerned that some of the modifications that are before you today will potentially have impacts on service provision and who actually provides service. We're working with folks to ensure that any urban services agreements that are in existence at the time presumably this measure passes and is signed into law shall remain in full force and effect and apply to urban reserve areas unless modified by mutual agreement between the county, affected city, and affected special district regarding the provision of urban service that is the subject of the agreement. Again, we're working with Representative Clem and others to ensure that this modification is put into the measure, and if it is done so, we'll be comfortable with moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm Senior Staff Counsel in the Office for the State Court Administrator. I wanted to, if I could, take a moment to explain a few issues that we see in Section 7 dealing with timelines on the court, and once I'm done with that, I'll explain how I think we can try to make that work. In light of Representative Barnhart's comments, I'd like to give a little context on what these cases are like. Barker's 5 is a case that was released last week dealing with the urban and rural reserves. In 2007, the legislature passed Senate Bill 1011, which started us down the road of the reserves process. Metro then began working on that. In June of 2010, Metro submitted their plan to LCDC. That plan then bounced back and forth between the two bodies for 2 years. In August of 2012, LCDC entered a final order. In September of 2012, parties began to file petitions with the Court of Appeals. Opening briefs were filed in October of 2012. There was additional briefing after that. Answering briefs in December of 2012. Oral argument was held on January 16, 2013. As we now know, the court released its opinion 13 months after that date. And I know 13 months seems like a terribly long time to issue a decision, so I'd like to give you a little context. This is a case of first impression. No one had had to deal with reserves before, so the court had no markers to go off of in making its decision. There were 22 petitioners, 7 respondents, 25 assignments of error, 58 sub-assignments of error, 36,000 pages of record, and very complex fact patterns specific to specific tracts of land. It's the most complex case the court's probably ever had. They made it a top priority, and they worked as hard as they could to get it out as quickly as they could. So, under current statute, for these types of cases, the time is as expediently as possible, and the court did that in this case. The reason we like that, and the reason that we have a little discomfort with putting a time limit on these sorts of things is because these are very complex cases, and time limits can affect the court's ability to provide meaningful judicial review. And a side effect of that is that it can delay other cases of great importance to the rest of the state, including juvenile cases, termination of parental rights, and frankly, other business cases that are very important to the business community. Having said that, the original amendment that we saw in this bill would have given the court 105 days from oral argument to time to issue a decision. And there was no safety valve in it. And so we spoke with the committee and Representative Clem to see if we could find some alternatives to make this more workable. And what we came up with was if this is necessary, if this is mission critical, then it would need to have a safety valve in there. So if the court finds that the case is simply too complex, they make findings on the record and say we can't do it in that amount of time. So that's written into the bill. And the original time frame was 105 days, and it's now 180. So those give us a little bit of relief on this. Our preference is not to change the time to review, but if it's mission critical, then that's why we can work with what you've given us in the Dash 12 amendments.
So are you supportive of the general concept pending final agreement with this language that you just talked about?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if this is the wording in Section 7 that you go forward with that you think is essential for this bill, we'll make it work.
Great.
Our preference, though, is if you decide you don't want to have it. I don't think it's necessary for what's happening here because you're going to decide, make some big decisions in this. And what we're really talking about is future cases. But, you know, if we...
You could live with it.
Right.
Great. Questions? Comments? Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Miller, I appreciate coming forward because I was in the Policy Committee when this issue came up. And it was one piece of the bill that I suppose I did have a little issue with was telling the court that, I mean, we're taking out language that basically says with greatest expediency we're telling the court to do it as quickly as they possibly can, and so now we're saying that's not fast enough. We want you to do it in 180 days, but we have this relief valve, so what's the difference between leaving the language the way it is with the greatest expediency, you know, trusting that the court, I guess, looks at the law and wants to follow it, as opposed to what we're putting in place now is 180 days with the ability, if it's a complex case, to go longer. Is there a difference?
Madam Chair, Representative Holby, I would say there isn't because the court does follow the law to the best of their ability, and they tried it. They did their very best to get Barker's 5 out as quickly as they could, and they will do that on the if the pending Metro UGB litigation is to go forward, they will do it there. It may become moot after this. We don't know. We'll have to see what happens with this bill, but there may not be a difference. I would also point out that the bill does do a couple other things. It gives Metro an additional year to process their UGB, so they get more time. It used to be 5 years under the bill. It would be 6 years. It gives LCDC 180 days to issue a final order, but that 180 days starts to run after they've decided to approve the decision, so it doesn't shorten the time period for them to get to the point where we're going to approve the decision. It's just the time for them to write the order, whereas the Court of Appeals will get the case, hear oral argument, 180 days, and issue a decision.
Any other? Do you want to follow?
No, Madam Chair. Just, you know, I guess just a comment. I just, you know, it's just difficult for me to, you know, put that kind of a, I guess, statement onto the court when we already asked them under law to do it with the greatest expediency possible, and now we're saying, actually, court, we don't think you do that, so we want to put 180 days into statute. I just was uncomfortable with that in the policy committee, and actually I'm still uncomfortable with that because, as Mr. Miller has just explained, the way the bill's written, it probably isn't going to make much difference. I don't know, just philosophical issue I guess I'm still struggling with.
Great. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment on that. As I read the exceptions that are in the amendment, it does require that the court take some action in order to utilize those exceptions. That by itself will tend to speed up consideration, simply because to exercise those, they have to do something.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. I don't know. Forgive me if I don't pronounce your name correctly. I'm going to do the best I can. Jerry Wiley, Randy Tucker from City Hillsborough, Randy Tucker, Metro, and Russ.
Tom Darrow.
Yes. That's a, yes, Dondera.
I can't write my own name.
No, that's okay. Mr. How about you start? So identify yourself for the record. And
I will. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jerry Willey, Mayor of Hillsborough. Thank you very much for your time today, and I will be brief. We want to show some appreciation to Representative Clem, Representative Davis, and Richard Whitman, as they've attempted and are trying to complete this Herculean task. I mean, imagine more than 32 people sitting around a table and representing a number of groups, trying to get them to consensus, and they worked very hard at doing that and trying to find consensus, and I think they've done a great job. The city of Hillsborough, as you have heard from Representative Clem, has given up about 1,500 acres of reserve opportunities for the future in lieu of certainty for today, and because that's what we felt like was certainly going to be very important for us to continue to be the economic driver that we believe we are for the region and certainly for the state of Oregon as well. We realize that, let me say that we are in support of this legislation, of course, realizing that we've got another amendment that's coming down the way, and we certainly will be watching to make sure that that is consistent with what we walked out of the meeting on Sunday evening in agreement with, and we want to make sure that the spirit of that agreement is reflective on this document. We also need to make sure that you've heard about special districts and services for special districts. When a region or a land comes into a city, is annexed into a city, the city has the ability to provide fire and police services for that, as well as park services and other things. City of Hillsborough is a full-service city, so we provide all of those services to our constituents. And we just want to be able to do that in any of the future land that we annex that's pertinent to this legislation. And that's what that is specific to, is any land brought in by this legislation, we would have the opportunity to negotiate that service provider. And primarily, it's to eliminate the opportunity of actually a double taxation, a tax that's put on the citizens by the special districts, as well as a tax that would be put on them for providing the city services as well. So with that, thank you very much for your time today, and I will certainly entertain any questions.
So you're fully in support of the general concept pending the final amendments?
I am.
Fantastic. Mr. Dondero.
Yes. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Russell Dondero. I live at 1506 Olympus Lane in Forest Grove, Oregon. I'm here regularly in the building as a college professor who's now retired and is very active in my community in a variety of groups. One of them is Washington County Citizens Action Committee Network, which many members are very much invested in this issue, particularly the folks in Save Helvetia, who along with 1,000 Friends brought this issue to the court. The reason I feel very strongly about this issue, and I do support the concept as drafted by Representative Chair Clem and the other members of the committee involved, I commend them for doing an incredibly difficult task in such a short period of time. And so I'm in support personally of the bill and the concept that we've seen and talked about, and I've heard nothing that would cause me personally to have concerns. I can't speak for Washington County Citizens Action Network or Save Helvetia, but I know in the email that's gone on my email, there's general support for what's going on down here. My major concern, and the reason why I'm here, is because citizens often feel frozen out of the process, both in their local governments as well as here in Salem. And so I think the good thing about this is that the people who felt frozen out in Washington County when the decision-making process was made, I think now feel their voices have been heard loud and clear by the Court of Appeals and by the legislature. And I think that's very important. We all live in an era when we see globally the power of citizen activism, but also the power of citizen disillusionment. And So I think someone who's chaired in Washington County the Citizen Participation Task Force for over a year, I feel a little bit chagrined that we didn't do our job. Because obviously when this particular process came down the pike in Washington County, a lot of people felt left out. And I think this addresses that issue. And hopefully we'll continue to remind us all that the citizens need to own this process. It's not something that just legislators own, not something that mayors own alone, or city councils, or metro. We all own it. And I know, speaking as a resident of Forest Grove, I'm very happy to see the changes, because my community has felt locked out of this process for decades. And now I see a chance of hope for industrial development that didn't exist before this process in the last week took place. So I'm very happy. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing your perspective, and thank you for all of your work, all the volunteer work that you do on behalf of your community. Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. As many of you know, last week Metro vigorously opposed the earlier attempt at this, or the earlier version of this bill that would have legislatively established the urban growth boundary and rewritten the map of urban and rural reserves in the Portland region. But at that time, of course, we anticipated a court ruling that would have moved us toward resolution of this long-running controversy and ultimately toward implementation of the decisions that have been made in the Portland region. As you know, that's not what happened. Lots has changed since last week. The court's ruling fundamentally leaves us in a different situation. And now we are in a situation where we have been at the table having this conversation in light of the changed circumstances, and rather than overriding a local decision, the legislation that's before you today represents the codification of an agreement among local governments, including Metro, and the key parties to the recent Court of Appeals ruling. In passing the bill as amended, then, the legislature will be acting at the request of local governments rather than against the will of those governments. You may have seen in the article in the Oregonian this morning that Metro Council President Tom Hughes was quoted as saying, "In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to do this, but we don't live in a perfect world." So we live in the world that you live in, and given recent events, HB 4078, as amended, would provide greater protection for farm and forest land. It would provide more predictability for local governments, and as well as local communities, home builders, and industrial developers, and improvements to the land use planning process going forward. So the Metro Council urges you to support House Bill 4078. To use your parlance, Madam Chair, we are fully in support of the general concept pending the final amendment.
Excellent.
If I may.
Excellent. That is what I like to hear. Well, thank you so much, and that's all I have signed up to speak on behalf of House Bill 4078. So with that, I'm going to close the work session.
And adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. And we are. Thank you.